You're listening to Now I've Heard Everything, interviews from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s with voices from the past.
The key is to work in your own circle of influence and to build your security within. Then you're not a function of how other people treat you.
Author and motivational speaker Stephen Covey, today on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Buell Thompson. Let's face it, most self-help books are a dime a dozen. Get a better job, have a happy marriage, raise smart kids. Well, so when one comes along that does all those things for people, it catches fire. Drawing heavily on principles he learned as a lifelong Mormon, Stephen Covey, in 1989, published a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And it caught fire. It became huge. It has since sold over 20 million copies worldwide. It spawned a little industry of its own. More books, tapes, videos, public appearances. I think there was even a calendar once. And finally, in 1996, Time magazine named Stephen Covey one of the 25 most influential people. So today, let's go back to where it all started. I interviewed Stephen Covey when his book first came out. So here now, from 1989, Stephen Covey.
Let me ask you for a couple of definitions first. What is, by your definition, a habit?
A habit is kind of a behavior pattern. It may be a mental behavior pattern, you know, like a mental habit or a physical habit, but it's essentially a combination of skill, how to do something, and knowledge, what to do, and desire or want to do. When they overlap, you've got a habit.
Of course, now you can have bad habits as well as good. You're talking about 7 good habits.
That's right. Effective habits. Highly effective habits.
Which brings me to my next question. What is, in your definition, a highly effective person?
Highly effective person would be someone who not only gets what they want, but they continue to get it. For instance, let's say that you want to have a happy marriage. So you would not only be able to have happiness now, but a continuing relationship. Or let's say you want a clean house. So you want the clean house, but you also want your kids to clean it cheerfully without being reminded. So effectiveness is always two sides. The right now, the short term, and the continuation over the long haul of that same kind of result.
Yet it's so easy. The temptation is there. If you've got something good going, you've stumbled on perhaps by accident something that works, just beat the heck out of it. Drain it dry.
A lot of people do, like a machine, you know. They just keep on running that baby night and day, and soon it's worn out and it can't produce tomorrow. A lot of people do that in their relationships. They essentially violate that relationship in the short term, but they get what they want, maybe. But then little by little, the whole relationship deteriorates into one of accommodation and hostility, and so they lose it. It's like the goose and the golden egg story, you know. You kill the goose that lays the golden egg. So true effectiveness is a real balance between short and long term, and between quantity and quality.
Now, just on the face of it, it sounds like this takes an awful lot of work.
There's no quick fix. To me, that's one of the most central things in life to realize. Don't look for a quick fix. Most of us crammed in school. But can you imagine cramming on a farm? You know, forget to plant in the spring, goof off during the summer and so forth, and pound the earth to bring in the harvest. You'll find that in every natural system, like a farm, there is no shortcut. There is no quick fix. In some man-made social systems, some people can make a lot of money in the short term doing various things, just like a bank robber who successfully robs bank could get a lot of money. But in natural systems, you will always find the law of the harvest will govern. Always. In fact, just yesterday, someone said, well, what about all these good examples we have out here that have all this money and they violate all these principles? I just said, study their marriages. Study their relationship with their kids. Study their relationship with their executive teams or other people that they, do they have continuing relationship? You will not find their, that they have continuing relationships with people.
But, you know, it's natural also for people to be skeptical of a book that claims to have the answers, the key to your happiness, your success, romance, Having happy children who will clean the house willingly for you.
I have the same skepticism, seriously, about all of these self-help, quick-fix, technique books that essentially have little success formulas and a bunch of platitudes. And I think people have had it with those. This book does not focus on this approach. The basic approach in this book is the first three habits deal with getting your own kind of house in order. That is a sense of who you are, to develop a personal mission statement based on your values, and then to organize your life around it so that you have balance. You don't climb a ladder of success and get to the top rung and realize it's leaning against the wrong wall. And that's the first three habits. Once you have an inner sense of peace and security, then the next three habits deal with your relationship with other people. You think win-win. That is mutual benefit. Now, people who get their sense of security by being compared to other people can't think win-win. They think win-lose. They see everything as a competition. They even fight with their spouse. They fight with their kids. They fight with employees. They fight with anyone who takes them on. Anyone who has a win-lose attitude stirs up win-lose in them, or they capitulate and go for lose-win. But it takes a lot more maturity to stay consistently with the win-win approach in all relationships in life.
That begins with self-esteem, doesn't it?
Self-esteem is the fruit of the first three habits. Self-confidence and self-esteem are literally the fruits of the first three habits. Then you see life as having plenty for everybody and to spare. You don't think scarcity, you think abundance. You're anxious to share profit. You're anxious to share recognition with other people. You're not threatened by the successes of other people. A lot of people, you know, are very threatened by other people, particularly their own brothers or sisters or neighbors or friends. They might say to them, "I'm happy for you," but inwardly they're just eating their heart out. They don't feel that way at all. To develop an abundance mentality, or the self-esteem, the self-confidence from within, enables you to feel a tremendous affirmation of other people, and you're happy for their successes instead of resentful.
As Wayne Dyer says, you'll see it when you believe it.
Yeah, that's true, that you have to see the fruits of this thing, but that's why there's no quick fix. Once a person gets their life in alignment with their values, seriously, they start to experience this inner strength and peace. And most people's lives, I won't say most people, but many people's lives are totally disheveled, and families are dysfunctional, and they're experiencing so much pain, and they're always looking for some gimmick or technique or quick fix. I think that if they can just emotionally accept there just isn't a quick fix, I've got to work on the inside out. Start with myself, where I am, my own circle of influence, and then try to improve that, and little by little, with patience and persistence, it'll start to pay tremendous dividends.
You know, I heard Phil Donahue ask this question once, and I've adopted it as my own. What made you so smart? Where did you come up with all the answers?
Well, I'm not so smart. I have attempted to study essentially highly effective people for about 20, 25 years, and I've been doing a lot of work in various organizations around the country. So I've kind of summarized or distilled what these people are like. I've also tried to practice it myself so that it is really integrated inside me. I don't always succeed at it, but I'm continually trying. But I've finally come to conclude that private victories precede public victories. That is, when your own personal character and life is in shape and you've got high self-mastery, then you have a self-esteem. Self-esteem is not a function of how other people treat you. It's a function of your own integrity to your value system. Then, out of that is the wellspring that leads to public victories with other people. And I mean over time, not just little public victories here and there and some sales contest. I mean significant relationship building with many important people over time.
After this short break, Stephen Covey admits to one of his failings.
Start your day with Now I've Heard Everything.
We post new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Subscribe now so you'll have something fresh to listen to and get your day going.
back to my 1989 conversation with Stephen Covey.
You said something important a moment ago, too. You said sometimes that you fail. Sometimes you fall down. Sometimes you slide backward a little bit. A lot of people will read a book such as yours or any kind of book that promises to help them advance somehow. And the first time they fail, they say, hey, that one didn't work either, and they put it on the shelf. They go buy the next one.
Yeah, they do. Their mentality is focused around gimmicks that will bring success, and they often will not persist. But if you believe the principle, and just because you flop does not mean the principle is flawed at all. The other day I was writing on the subject of patience, and I could feel all this noise taking place in my house and people banging on walls and so forth, and I could feel right while I was writing about patience, my patience going down. All of a sudden, one of my sons starts pounding on the bathroom door, let me in, let me in, let me in, just a high, shrilly scream like that. So I went out there and said, now you go into your room and you stand there to behave yourself. You know, I kind of lost my cool. And then I saw one of my sons bleeding from the mouth. He was hit in a tackle football game in about a 3.5-foot hallway. He was bleeding from the mouth, and David went down to get a towel out of the bathroom to help his brother, and Maria was taking a shower, wouldn't open up. So I went in to apologize to David, and the first thing I said was, no, I just opened the door to apologize. The first thing he said was, I won't forgive you. And I said, oh, why not? Honey, I didn't realize you're trying to help your brother. I'm really sorry. He said, because you did it last week. It's what I call an overdrawn emotional bank account. Unless you make continually deposits into the bank accounts, that is the trust, the good feeling with other people, you will not gradually develop the capacity to really produce those beautiful cooperation and teamwork things that you want in your family or in your organization. The emotional bank account is a beautiful metaphor to use in thinking about all relationships, because like a financial bank account, you can continually make deposits or you can take withdrawals from it. And if you are in a deposit mode continually with your loved ones, hugging them in many ways, physical, verbal, emotional, instead of kind of blaming them, comparing and shaming and so forth, gradually you build tremendous reserve capacity. Then you can make some mistakes and they'll smile about it and you're forgiven.
There's also, when you were talking about, you talk in the book about roadmaps and the perceptions that you begin with. And in your case, that perception was, here was your son, he was bothering you for no reason.
Right.
But when you learned that he had a very good reason, that there was blood dripping on the carpet, then your perception changed. And I read a book somewhere that said if you got a boss you can't get along with, that boss is just grouchy all the time, gives you orders, things that you don't want to do, think of that person as having an inoperable brain tumor. That's why they do those things. And they said you'd be amazed how your attitude toward your boss will change.
It is. That's what you call a change of your perception or a change of your paradigm, and that can be done almost instantaneously. I would say another good way to look on them is someone who is hurting, they're in pain, they're full of fear, and they need someone that accepts them and loves them and affirms them. And if they were more perfect, you would need less compassion. You would need less patience. So it's an opportunity for you to cultivate more of the character strengths to show that kind of affirmation and love toward them.
Yeah, it's hard, I guess, to feel sorry for a boss who, you know, they knew what the risks were of the job when they took the job. They knew there'd be high pressure.
Well, I think that we should never make other people's behavior the thing that kind of controls us. Otherwise, you build your emotional life on their weaknesses, see, and you give away your own personal power and you empower their weaknesses to continue to mess your life up. The key is to work in your own circle of influence and to build your security within. Then you're not a function of how other people treat you. And in a sense, it's like carrying your own weather with you inside rather than relying upon the outside social environment to affirm what you want. Now, most people don't do this. In fact, that's the essence of the first habit, is that your life is a product of your values and your own decisions, not a product of your conditions at all. Don't empower other people's weaknesses to mess your life up.
What length of time should a person take to read this book?
Well, I think it's the kind of book that you should kind of study over a period of time and teach someone else, involve someone else, like a loved one or a friend who would have an interest, involve them and have them discuss it, and then apply at the end of each chapter our application exercises. For instance, our family mission statement reads like this. The mission of our family is to create a nurturing place of order, truth, love, happiness, and relaxation, and to provide opportunity for each person to become responsibly independent and effectively interdependent in order to serve worthy purposes in society. Now, that is only an example of a mission statement. People need to develop their own, and every family situation is different. Some people have a very broken, dysfunctional family. Well, they can start with their own personal mission statement. People can start wherever they want to try to get a clarified sense of what their life is about and the principles upon which they want to base it. And if they will live by that over time, they'll be amazed at the personal power, the peace, and the integrity it gives them. I would just, if I were to give a key essence to it, I believe that private victories always precede public victories. When people do not win publicly, that is, in their relationships with others, look to the personal life, the private life, as the first place to go to work on. Like Henry David Thoreau put it, for every 1,000 hacking at the lees of evil, there is one striking at the root. The root usually lies inside our own heart and mind. So if we work from the inside out, I think we're on the key to becoming really effective with other people.
Stephen Covey died in 2012. He was 79. Now, you can get a copy of Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, by simply tapping on the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. And we may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. And while you're at heardeverything.com, if you need more motivation, listen to my 1991 interview with Tony Robbins.
In our society, we're asleep. We have forgotten what we're capable of. We've forgotten what we can really achieve as people. We've bought into a vision of our life that is so far below who we really are, it's a joke.
And my 2004 conversation with personal finance guru, Susie Orman.
What happens to your money affects your life. Think twice before you trust some financial advisor who makes a living off of what you do with your money.
And as always, we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you know where you can find us, everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. Next time on Now I've Heard Everything, you know, all political commentators are controversial. I guess that's the nature. But we'll revisit one of my interviews with one of the most controversial, my 2011 conversation with Ann Coulter.
It's a peculiar way liberals talk. Conservatives are far less prone to the sloganeering and the talking points. What the Tea Partiers, by and large, are doing is reading the Constitution and talking about the Constitution.
That's next time on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson.